Listeners should be aware that the following program contains language and audio images which may be found disturbing and may not be suitable for your snotty-nosed little brat who probably cusses like a sailor behind your back anyway. Parental discretion is advised.
Greetings and welcome to this edition of Technology Bites.
We are so glad you could be here. And we are so sad for those that are not here, like Barrett. Welcome to Technology Bites. I see Flickin is still.
Hey, don't bite you.
What?
Wow. What's going on with that thing?
What did you just do?
What in the world? Something sounds crazy.
What?
I don't know. Things sound odd.
Different.
Do they? Do they?
Do really? They?
Do they really? All right, welcome to Technology Bites. I'm Jay Lee. I'm Peter Hughes. He's not Barrett.
You know, he's there, but he's not there. That's it. That's his mic banging around.
That's Peter's mic banging around?
Oh, he's not. He doesn't know.
He doesn't know we have him connected?
No, he should.
Huh.
Yeah. We might want to turn him down just in case.
Yeah. All right, I just got a text from Barrett. He is caffeinating.
Oh.
Yeah. How sweet.
That's good.
So, he apparently did not manage it. He did not manage his time well. Boy, it's kind of weird. You guys are flailing around inside of the control room.
Things are a muck.
It is. It's a mess. You know that
something's
kind of,
not.
That's comforting in a way because
phone software is not working.
Man, everything is awesome. Who's calling in?
That's what's weird. The phone software is not showing that call coming in.
Show it over here. That's what's
there
weird.
There we go.
All right. Well, anyway, this is Technology Bites. We're here every Wednesday night, 8 to 10, regardless of technical malfunctions and things sounding weird. Flickton is working on getting Peter Hughes available to us on the Skypes from San Antonio. Barrett is in the process of paying for his latte and will be here shortly. So it's just another Wednesday night for Technology Bites, unless you're listening someplace else that rebroadcasts us on another night or morning.
He said he can hear us now.
Can you hear us now, Pete?
Yeah, the problem was on my end.
Really? I... No!
Yeah!
It was inflicted.
Yeah.
We heard you grunting angrily at something.
Well, and if you hadn't potted me down, I was that that was me getting back to sit down so I could talk.
Oh, but we weren't sure.
I spent the next
we weren't sure what was coming out.
Yeah.
But you guys were...
we couldn't
trying to get you guys to let me speak.
We couldn't trust that the next thing out of your mouth would have been appropriate based on the grunting.
No, somebody jacked with. No, I know. I have good mic discipline.
All right. But not when
but,
you
just no, no somebody door had unplugged dog had halfway unplugged my headphone.
Oh.
So I, you know, the thing came up. I saw the Skype call come up and I hit answer to it and then I immediately, you know, realized I'm not hearing anything, and so I went around to the back of the computer and fixed it.
Well, after 19 years of being on the air with Technology Bites, I would not really expect things to go well, so I'm happy to say I wasn't disappointed this evening as we... But it seemed particularly chaotic. As Flicked was thrashing around trying to figure out why he wasn't succeeding in getting you on the air... And he was certainly felt better when he found out it was not his problem. So that's good. And of course, you know, I'm in here by myself in the broadcast booth, and I don't have Barrett here, you know, smiling approvingly at me. So that's not good. But we're going to move on because, hey, you know what? I don't know what the exact date is or anything, but between now and July somewhere is our anniversary.
Oh, yes.
We're going to probably officially celebrate it in July at the Geek Gathering.
It's always around that time.
19 years, as I mentioned earlier. Seems like longer, doesn't it? Especially when you're tuning in at the beginning of the
show.
It was
like 19 years this year.
Yeah.
I mean, it was 19 years in this year. Not meaning 19 years ago, but the 19 years were all in... this year.
Feels like this year lasted 19 years?
Yeah.
What do you mean?
Well, it's kind of like the first Friday of the month.
Oh, you're going down that road.
Yeah, it's harder to explain than it actually is.
And probably less worth it.
That's why I didn't try explaining it.
All right, you can visit us online at geekradio.com, the website that never fails. And you can also...
Wow, you just wanted to guarantee it.
I want to send it down in flames. No, the website is has been pretty reliable for the most part. We were happy with our website. It's very, very straightforward. There's nothing fancy there. It's got the podcast. It's got the announcements for the Geek Gathering, which is Friday, by the way. Are you cutting meat on like some kind of slicer?
Or maybe at the dentist?
No, I think there's some house cleaning going on in another part of the house.
Awesome.
Don't try to be quiet, Barry. You're here now.
No vacuum discipline.
No. All right. So you can also hang out on IRC. We are old school that way. We have the IRC channel cooking. IRC.cuckoo.com if
Pre-Twitter.
You know what you're doing with IRC. And the channel is Tech Bites. If you're not IRC savvy, you can go to geekradio.com and use our web client because we have that going. So it's the show within a show. You want to participate in that because it's like, you know, Twitter, only different. You can actually type more than 140 characters. All right, so the phone number here is 713-526-5738. We're going to be opening up the lines a little bit later in the show to take your calls and answer your questions about computers and technology and all that stuff. So get that ready to go. I see somebody's trying to dial in.
Keep on dialing.
We're going to get to that call in a moment. Hello, Barrett. Welcome to the show.
Thank you.
Is your mic even on? Yeah, Flicked have got it down.
Nothing. Nothing is working for me tonight. Yeah.
What happened?
My motorcycle is now a twin. I parked next to Flicked's twin. Feels like a twin, at least. Like, I think I'm missing something on a cylinder.
Is that a speed triple or a triple speed?
I don't know anymore. It's a limp along. at this point.
Which one is this?
This is the 1995 one that I just did. I had, like, the pipes blacked out on it, so I sent it off to a shop, and the guy that, you know, is, like, known for blacking out pipes apparently went on, you know, whatever the Texas version of walkabout is, like, went surfing, went to Mexico, just disappeared for a few weeks. So it's a carbureted bike. So there it sat with, you know, the 10 or 15%, you know, ethanol fuel in it, which doesn't do good for, you know, not gunking up carbs. So hopefully that's all it is. I mean, it could be, you know, who knows. My mission was to get here, but maybe get coffee first, but mainly get here and, you know, not check out the mechanical issues. So I will check them out post-show.
Maybe there's some gauze in there.
Yeah, who knows?
KD5 on the IRC points out that the first Friday in July, which comes before the first Saturday that month, is July 4th.
Woohoo, fireworks.
So we're going to blow stuff up, maybe. I don't know. All right, so
good idea.
Barrett is here. We'll have to think about that. I'm inclined to just go move forward on geek gatherings and so forth. If you want to celebrate the 4th of July some other way, feel free, but we'll just have a geek 4th of July where we light up LEDs.
We might be able to see some fireworks from there. I'd be, you know, maybe go to Google Maps and see the 3D views and see if there's a clear view of where they usually set them up.
Or we can just put the blinking box in the middle of the parking lot and ooh and ah.
We could just stream. We could stream some fireworks from somewhere, given the bandwidth. I'll pre-download.
All right.
Ooh, with the simulcast cheesy music that they inevitably play alongside such things?
Yes, absolutely. Why would we miss that opportunity? All right, so we're going to get Barrett settled here. We're going to get other things settled in the studio so that we can present you with another hour and 40 minutes of 50 minutes of broadcast excellence. So what we're going to do is just take this time to go to San Antonio and do the Technology Bytes Info Shot with Peter Hughes. Take it away, Info Shot.
It's the Technology Bytes Info Shot. Technology news and commentary by Peter Hughes. Injected directly into your skull.
Wow, Jay's voice isn't all that loud, but the intro to the Info Shot was like, got right into the center of your brain, kind of like it's supposed to. Anyways, this one's an interesting one. The story, there's a little bit more information, and the thing that sucks is, of course, they're not going to, especially in a normal news story, they're not going to give you all the details about the story, and you'll understand better in a second. Remember, there was last week there we talked about the crypto locker and some of that. Well, it was announced very recently that the botnet that drove that has been shut down. The FBI shut it down. The guy who supposedly is in charge of it, his online name is Slavik, who supposedly had retired. And then the authorities say he went on a dazzling crime spree that used more than 1 million infected computers to reach directly into U.S. banks and businesses and steal millions of dollars. The FBI named him as a leader of a computer crime syndicate that spanned several continents and funneled money around the globe, often without being detected. The FBI has identified Slavik as Evgeny Mikhailovich Bogachev, a Russian national whose whereabouts remain a mystery. Prosecutors say he's responsible for two of the most sophisticated and destructive forms of malicious software in existence, Game Over Zeus and Crypto Locker. The alleged bank heists topped $100 million, including $7 million from a bank in North Florida, $374,000 from a PNC bank account belonging to a plastics company in Pennsylvania, and nearly $200,000 from a bank account owned by an assisted living facility in Pennsylvania. Bogachev allegedly controlled a vast worldwide network that included computers in Canada, Germany, France, Luxembourg, Iran, Kazakhstan, the Netherlands, and the United Kingdom. But the backbone of the infrastructure resided in the Ukraine, according to a senior U.S. law enforcement official who was not authorized to speak publicly because of the pending court cases. The operation to dismantle the network began on May 7th in Donetsk and Kiev, Ukraine, two cities with political violence. You might have seen them on the news in that time frame. The deal is Ukrainian police seized and copied key computers in the network. On Friday, the FBI, working with police around the world, kicked off a 72-hour operation to shut down every command and control computer in the Zeus network. So by this article was dated the 4th of June, so that's all. So that's today. So this is all, I just to get it right. So that some of that is this week, so Monday of this week. So they shut down every command and control computer in the Zeus network. By Saturday, CryptoLocker had ceased working, and by Monday, police had freed more than 300,000 computers from the Zeus network. The deal, Game Over Zeus, or P2P Zeus, emerged in September 2011. The malicious software is designed to steal confidential banking credentials and passwords. We've talked about it. I don't know that we labeled it as P2P Zeus or Game Over Zeus, but we did talk about this particular one on past shows. The heist begins with a phishing email designed to entice a computer user to click on a link. The link launches the virus, which surreptitiously infects the computer. So that's just, all you had to do is click the link. So these deals where you get an email and it said, your credit card is past due, click this link. The people who clicked that link, if you're on the wrong computer, that's how the malware got in. And it includes a keylogger that can capture every keystroke made by the user and injects codes that can replace a legitimate banking site with a fake one that asks the user for confidential information like credit card and social security numbers while still allowing it to communicate with the legitimate site. That computer becomes part of a network of infected computers, basically the botnet controlled by the computers. Essentially, the computers in the net are infected with a code that direct it to communicate once a week with control websites located around the world. And that's where the orders go out. Like I said earlier, Zeus controlled more than 1 million computers. They would, October 18, 2011, Zeus infected Haysite Reinforced Plastics in Pennsylvania using a phishing email purporting to be from a banking payment network. Instead, the email delivered the malware that captured banking credentials for the company. So 2 days later, the hacker's computer accessed the company's accounts at PNC Bank, created an electronic funds transfer, and moved almost $200,000 to an account at SunTrust Bank in Atlanta. The next day, then they moved the money to Great Britain, used electronic transfer to move money to accounts in Great Britain. To draw attention away from the massive transfers, the hackers often created a diversion, such as a denial-of-service attack, that would bombard the website with traffic in an attempt to shut it down. While the business was scrambling to protect its portal, the hackers would push the wire transfers through unnoticed for hours. And then by the time the bank realized the money was missing, it had been laundered through so many accounts it became untraceable. FBI Special Agent Elliot Peterson wrote in an affidavit that fraudulent wires in the amount of $1 million were very common. Peterson's analysis of one U.S. bank's transaction logs found more than $8 million in Zeus-related losses over 13 months beginning in July 2012. They also used the Zeus botnet to deploy CryptoLocker. We talked about this one last week, the malware that encrypts a computer's data and locks it up unless a victim pays a ransom. The ransom, which reached as high as $750, had to be paid in untraceable money cards or Bitcoin, and the FBI estimated that there were 230,000 computers infected by CryptoLocker, including 120,000 in the U.S. The FBI and private computer firms security firms have disrupted botnets before. Most of the time, the deal is they rely on a small number of command and control servers operated by the hacker to give the orders. And so law enforcement can disrupt it by capturing or shutting down the command servers. But Game Over Zeus was different. Instead of a centralized command structure, Zeus made every infected computer part of the control structure, which let them move traffic, stolen data, through any computer in the network. Other computers acted as relay points, sending the stolen data back to the hackers and sending out the orders. Tom Kellerman, cybersecurity chief for Trend Micro, said that Bogachev is quote, a next generation hacker. He's one of the elite actors in cyberspace. So the key break, here's the kind of the meat of it where you get the interesting stuff. A key break in the case came from a compromised computer server in the UK that the FBI agents at first believed served as a communication hub for the hackers. The British police secretly copied the contents of the server. And then on the server, the FBI found a password-protected site, visitcoastweekend.com, that included a detailed ledger of hundreds of financial transactions with dates, company names, and amounts, including the one with the Pennsylvania Plastics Company. So basically all of the items on the list were found to match bank fraud reports. Then a confidential informant tipped the FBI off to the syndicate administrator's email address. And from then they got the emails obtained through a search warrant served on a U.S. online provider. FBI agents linked the address to Bogachev and the server logs that hosted the website where agents found the ledger. So they tracked it back, the traffic from server to server, from country to country. As we unwound the case, said Special Agent Tim Gallagher, who's in charge of the cybercrime division at the Washington field office, we needed and enlisted the help of numerous foreign countries. Even the Russian authorities are cooperating on the case. Once the FBI understood the network structure, the cyber squad devised a massive technical plan to take it down. They analyzed the network and found the hackers need just 24 hours to completely update the system and respond to private industry attempts to block them. This is from court papers. In addition to severing the network's communication channels with the infected computers, the FBI also had to dismantle a computer algorithm that generated more than 1,000 complicated web domain names every week. The network used the names, usually complicated, nonsensical combinations of letters ending in .com, .net, or .biz, to create the check-in website for the infected computers to deliver their payloads. Private security researchers reverse engineered the algorithm so the FBI could then predict which names would be generated each week. So as part of the takedown, they seized the domain names. So when the infected computers began their weekly check-in, they went instead to an FBI-controlled computer, which obviously was safe. So you couldn't just block the malware, said Sean Henry, a former assistant executive director at the FBI. Disrupting the infrastructure, blocking the malware isn't enough. That will just delay them for a day. Disrupting the infrastructure is a big, big step. When the takedown began early Friday morning, these cyber criminals responded with countermeasures to try and regain control of the network, according to that senior law enforcement official, and apparently they failed. So that's kind of cool. I wish there was a I wish there was a more technical article, but, again, it only happened last week, so I have a feeling there will be more information coming out. But it sounds like one of the things that's happening is that the criminals are getting a lot more sophisticated, but this time it sounds like maybe the good guys got some good consulting or, asked the right people and did the right thing and tracked this down and were successful. And now there's a few Mac stories, just so you, just so you're warned. WWDC, so it is the Apple Worldwide Developers Conference, and they're doing the news today. They're bigger in the news today. The first one is this one affects kind of every computer. Laptops could get even thinner than they are now, especially like the MacBook Air. Intel on Monday announced a new family of Core M Broadwell processors, which could possibly cut down even further on power consumption via improved cooling. At Computex, Intel President Renee James showed off a 2-in-1 PC powered by the new 14-nanometer Intel Core M chip, making its way into the fifth generation Broadwell of Intel processors. They utilize less energy and improve battery life while providing enough power for consumers to enjoy a smooth experience on supported devices. Yeah, that doesn't sound like marketing language at all, does it? The 2-in-1 PC shown off at Computex, though, was just 7.2 millimeters thick. So if you think of like a MacBook Air, it's like instead of getting fatter as it goes back, it stayed that skinny. According to the data supplied by Intel during their presentation, these new processors will run up to 60% cooler, will offer an increase in performance between 20 and 40%, will draw 10 to 45% less power, and take up half the space in devices. So it could get, you know, at some point, I wonder, are they going to have what the MacBook Air that doesn't, that's the thickness of a sheet of paper in the super future? So that's an interesting, interesting possibility that's coming up. You know, hardware wise, basically that's the reference, you know, Intel has the reference design. So this is going to happen. It's just a matter of when and, you know, what Apple chooses to do with it when they get it. And frankly, what if, you know, if you're a Windows, this one does have some Windows bearing. This could be for a MacBook Air-esque Windows machines as well. In other kind of new news, the code name or the public name for the next OS X is Yosemite, and it's going to come out this fall, and it's free. Now the developer preview is out, and so one of the things that sounds like may be coming based on the you know, based on the kind of people going and digging into the guts of the developer preview is that it sounds like a Retina iMac could be in the making. When they went in and looked, they found some resolutions that don't match up, you know, that don't have an equivalent in the current line. And so, it's possible that Apple may initially move to split the iMac lineup with Retina models initially coming in at higher price points alongside the existing non-Retina models. And then over time, you know, then as the Retina displays come down, drop the other, non-Retinas. So they're talking about a, 5760 by 3240 resolution screen, which that would be pretty awesome on a 27-inch. And you know, talking about the new operating system, they didn't announce any new hardware. But the biggest thing that they're doing, and, you know, you can find articles and read more about it if you're interested. But the kind of the key thing, and the only reason I reported this news here is because it seems to me it does tie to a trend. The biggest thing Apple's focusing on is what they call continuity features to improve cross-platform integration of iOS 8 and OS 10 Yosemite. One of the few new abilities designed to allow better transitions from iOS device to Macs is called Handoff, which allows users to start a task on one device and swap it to another nearby device. As described by Apple, Handoff can be used for several different activities, including email and web browsing. Users could begin writing an email on an iPhone, for example, and then switch to a Mac to finish. Websites work similarly, allowing users to browse the web on one device and then continue looking at the same website on another device. You can already do that, actually, with iCloud tabs, but Handoff apparently makes the process much easier and extends functionality to other apps. As demoed during the keynote, iOS devices and Macs are aware of each other and pick up a task when nearby. So it's not like you have to, like, you know, push a button and, you know, cast it to the thing. So that could, you know, the of course, so on the one hand, Handoff, that's kind of a cool trend of, you know, having your stuff available on lots of devices. On the other hand, that's like supreme lock-in because you've got to have all Apple devices, of course, to hand the stuff off. So they're, you know, they're, you can see why they're doing it. One of the other things that's kind of cool, the enhanced continuity between OS X and iOS also allows Mac devices in close proximity to an iPhone to both place and receive calls, leveraging Bluetooth and Wi-Fi with the iPhone serving as a relay. That means you could answer a call that came into your iPhone on your Mac, which is kind of a useful feature. You know, like if your iPhone's across the room charging or, you know, isn't accessible. Similarly, iPads and Macs are now able to receive SMS messages from non-Apple devices, which is a function that you could only do previously on the iPhone. iPads and Macs are also able to utilize an instant hotspot feature that allows them to connect to an iPhone hotspot with just a click. And AirDrop is also cross-platform. The other big thing they announced that is interesting, that I saw that looked interesting, is in Mail, in the Apple Mail client, for sending large files to someone else. You know, if you think about what you have to do today, if you're sending a large file to somebody, you can't know if they're going to receive it. If you want to be sure they do, you have to go do the Dropbox thing and, you know, get a link and do all that stuff. Apple has basically announced in the next operating system they've automated that. They're using iCloud for it. So what happens is you have this huge file, so you attach it to an email and you send it to somebody. If they have a Mac, then it'll just get it and it'll retrieve it automatically, just like an email attachment goes today, regardless of the huge size. If it goes to a machine that doesn't have, you know, the current version of Apple Mail, it will get a link. It automatically, basically, it substitutes a link so they can click that link and download the file without it having to go through their email. So that's kind of a nifty feature. It shows they're thinking. And, you know, the funny thing is, their operating system seems to rev pretty, feels to me as they rev their operating system pretty quick, which is in stark contrast to like the iPhone and the iPad, where it always seems like it's never soon enough when they get a new version of their hardware out. And then finally, on new stuff, Dell has announced three new monitors. This is an Apple stuff. They talked about future development stuff, but not new hardware. Three new monitors in Dell's Ultra Sharp line. Their sizes from 21.5 to 27 inches. They have integrated 2.0 megapixel webcams, built-in speakers, and dual digital microphone combo jacks. Each monitor is said to be full HD and have a 178-degree viewing angle. Input options are the usual things like VGA and HDMI, but also DisplayPort and USB 3.0. I'm not going to give you all the numbers and stuff on them because they're just, it's the 1920 by 1080. Since they're high definition, that's the size. I will say, I guess, just a quick aside is it's sort of irritating with HD. And so that 1920 by 1080, then a lot of display makers have sort of frozen at that. And so when you get a bigger screen, they just make the pixels bigger. So you don't see any more content on your bigger screen. It's just larger. So it's like the books for the vision impaired, if I want a bigger monitor, I paid extra. I just got a monitor a couple months ago, and I paid extra so that I got one that had more pixels in it. Because that's what I want, is to put more content on it, not to have it larger. Anyways, the cool part with this, though, is they've got they're optimized for Microsoft Link, giving them a little more flexibility for the business market. Their IPS, so they're, you know, with the decent refresh rates and all that. One of the things is the HDMI is for use with tablets and smartphones. So it's kind of interesting to see somebody focusing these monitors where they're making them available to use with smartphones and those kinds of devices. So they're coming out. They're not cheapo monitors, but they're not super expensive. They start at about $280 for the 21.5 inch, and get up to it's under $500 for the 27. And that's the news. I'm Peter Hughes, and back to you, Jay.
nice
crappy segue.
I like crappy segues. All right, so welcome back to the other part of the show. I see we have one call in the queue. We have all these open lines, and we're all eager to talk to you. So call 713-526-5738 if you want to be on the air with the generous and friendly hosts of Technology Bites. And, you know, that's the number. We'll talk about that number more throughout the course of the evening to encourage you to call it. We're not asking for money right now, so that should be a good thing. Groovehouse.
Yes. Yes, yes.
Well, nice segue. God, everybody's just kind of lobbing these weird pitches at me tonight. All right, Groovehouse.
Yes, Jay.
This mic is very, very weird.
All
very
right.
Hot.
Let's rewind here for a second.
Hot. He keeps turning it down. I keep turning it back up.
All right, Groove House.
Yes, Jay.
Who do we have?
Next, we're going to speak with Dave.
There's Groove House. Hi, Dave.
Hey, I'm embarrassed to call you this evening. I was on the air with you last week, and I had that invalid IP configuration.
Yeah.
I failed troubleshooting 101.
Which was?
It's got a little coupling in the cable, and it wasn't connected properly.
The cable wasn't plugged in properly?
Yeah, I've got one that runs all the way from the router, and then just before it hits the computer, there's a little connection that I put an extender on to extend the Ethernet cable.
Ah.
And it's got that little plastic thing that when you push it in there, it clicks.
Yeah.
Well, the plastic thing in there, it's still on there, but it doesn't click.
I see. So you didn't have a secure connection on a creatively rigged Ethernet cable extender. Well, you know, I will say this. I still hadn't seen that message before. And so that's interesting to know that a cable that is not connected properly would confuse Windows to the point that it had an error message like that to tell you. I would have thought that it would just not have sensed the connection, but I guess because it wasn't connected correctly, it couldn't talk to the router to get the IP address properly.
Yeah, just before I connected it to the Apple, I pushed it in and then connected, and it worked. And the way it's connected, it kind of hangs. So I guess I moved it, and it didn't make a proper connection. But I changed out the cable, it clicked, and it was up and running like it was supposed to be.
Did we ask you to check out your link lights, like the lights, you know, where you plug in that cable last week?
No, but they were blinking in the back of the computer.
It must have sensed that it had a partial connection, but it was not.
Those lights go on if they complete a circuit, so I think even like, you know, you could put in like a crossover cable and they may still light up.
I don't know.
So you could have had like enough to light it up and enough to get the data over it, possibly. It's odd.
It was yellow, though, blinking in the back of the computer.
Was it rhythmic, or was it like kind of blinking in spurts?
In spurts, you know, kind of like the same thing it does at the router itself in a switch box.
You say it was yellow?
Is there a green one back there too, though? Because some have amber, amber.
Usually,
but if there's an amber and green, that's...
Well, a lot of times on a lot of them now, there's a link light, which usually is off or is green, and then there's an activity light, which blinks, and a lot of times they'll be amber or green, depending on if you have a 100 meg connection or a gig connection, or sometimes 10 meg or 100 meg. But they'll change color depending on the speed that you've got.
Yeah, one was blinking amber. I did notice that. But whether it was always amber, I don't know. But I changed out the cable, and it was working fine now, and in trouble since.
It's still amber, or did it change colors?
I don't know. I didn't actually go back there and check it. I just changed out the cable, and I looked at that little thing down by the clock, and it came up instantly. But I mentioned I would follow up.
No, I'm glad you did. It's an interesting symptom, and I'm glad to know what was causing it, because I would never have thought to check how secure the connection was. I mean, the fact that it was trying to get an IP from the router and it failed or said something about invalid IP configuration meant that the computer's network card was talking to the router but not getting back the information that it thought it should get, that it produced that error. I would never have guessed that was it. Check how, you know, and that's that. You're right. It's 101. It's like, check your network connections, check your cables. And we didn't even try that. We talked about rebooting stuff, but
I just doubled my troubleshooting repertoire. Before, I only knew how to turn it off and turn it on again, and now it's plug it, unplug it, and plug it in again. So I know twice as much
check
as I did before this call. Yeah.
I mean, if you had not gotten any network connectivity, but with, you know, and no error message, I would have thought maybe I might have said, you know, check your network cable. Back and followed up with us on that.
Yeah, I think it might even help somebody else, so that's why I did it.
I can see there will be a future for me to share that with somebody else and look like a genius.
All right.
All right, have a good night. Thanks for your call.
All right, bye.
I had a somewhat similar troubleshooting situation that I had to do because I had to do some familial help.
Immediate or extended?
Immediate.
Going up or going
up.
Across? Okay.
So yeah, my parents, their network connection, internet connection stopped working. They have DSL, so they thought maybe it was the modem. So they went and bought another one. But every time they hooked the Mac Mini I'd given them into it, it would always say there's no Ethernet connection or the device on the other end isn't listening or isn't turned on or something. But they would get lights on the modem. But the thing is, they had no other computer, so I couldn't tell them, well, plug it into something else, try something else. So several days went by, and I told them, okay, well, maybe it actually could be the Ethernet jack on the the Mini, maybe. And so I told them to buy a USB Ethernet adapter just in case to try it. And then they actually got a new modem from Verizon that provides theirs, and it had Wi-Fi built into it. The previous one didn't. So in helping troubleshoot it, the Mac Mini has built-in Wi-Fi. So I had them turn on Wi-Fi, and they connected. But again, every time they plugged in directly the cable, it wouldn't work. So installed the drivers for the USB Ethernet, rebooted it, plugged it in, and it worked. So I'm guessing it was an electrical strike that went over the phone lines into the modem and then through the modem and the wire into the Ethernet jack on the Mini and actually fried the logic on the Mini side.
That happened to one of my computers when I was living in Magnolia. I believe my parents, it came down and fried actually just a board in the machine, you know.
I had that happen to me about 10 years ago. But it, in addition to frying the Ethernet card that was in my computer, it also fried the 24-port Kingston hub that I had it hooked into.
What year was this?
2000.
It was a hub.
One, maybe.
It was still the 24 ports in 2001. Yeah. It was pretty nice, though.
It was like a 19-inch rack mount 24-port hub. Yeah.
Wi-Fi seems to be jumping up and down. I don't know if we just lost Pete or not.
I'm wired in, but he did get lost, yeah.
All right. 713-526-5738 is the number to call if you'd like to be on the air with Technology Bites. We are taking all calls. We got about 15 minutes left before we have to take a station break. Got one call in the queue. Plenty of open lines. So if you want to participate, feel free to give us a ring. 713-526-KPFT. Groovehouse.
Yes.
Hello, Groovehouse.
Hello, Jay.
Who do we have?
Up next, we're going to speak with Gary.
Gary, you're on the air with Technology Bites.
I just want a kind of general overview about paywalls. I found a link on the site to the New York Review of Books article and an article there that I wanted to read. And what I generally do is I copy and paste my Word and print it out so I can read it. And I did this 3 or 4 times, and my Word kept coming up saying, well, Word is unable to process this document and will be shutting down. I said, okay, I've seen that before. And so I went back to the site, and I printed, and it printed it out, but it only printed half of the page, even though it was full page on my screen. So my question is, how do they do that? How do they screw up your own Word document?
They don't.
Copy and paste. And is that what a paywall is, that they won't let you print out anything? I mean, I saw it said sign in, sign up, and, you know, I know that it's a...
Gary.
Yeah.
You have misdiagnosed.
Okay, well, it wouldn't work.
All right, so there's two things you need to be aware of. First of all, web pages are formatted to look correctly on your screen, but are not necessarily formatted in such a way as to print on a standard 8.5 by 11 sheet of paper.
Is that intentional?
It's not necessarily intentional. It's thought that if you're reading it on your screen, there's probably not much need to print it out.
That's why a lot of articles will have the print now or print me key that formats it correctly for printers.
Right. They'll say that, so that, some websites will offer a print option where you can click print and you know, like when I do my bills with Verizon, they have printable version of my bill. So it takes me to a version that's formatted to come out on my printer properly. But the certain websites, many websites just are not set up to do that. So the other problem you're having is that if you copy and paste text or an entire website into a Word document, or you try to save it as a doc file, it may have content that's just causing your Microsoft Word to throw up and not want to launch it. So that's hard to say.
That's weird.
Are you pasting it directly into a Word document, like you open up Word and then you go to your web browser?
Everywhere I go, I copy and paste. I only copy the text. I don't copy any ads or anything else. And this time, every time I tried it, it just came up and said Word is unable to process.
Once you've opened up Word and went to paste it, and then it bombed out, or is it that you?
Yes, okay. Yes. Every time I pasted it.
I would just be curious. Maybe try opening up Notepad and just paste it in Notepad, because it won't try to do any kind of formatting or anything, and just see what happens. I know that you can, on some sites with JavaScript, you can actually say, hey, if the user tries to copy and paste anything, don't let anything go to the clipboard, but that wouldn't kill Word.
All right, no. So they don't do this to prevent you.
No, it's not a conspiracy.
The data.
They're not going after your copy of Word to get back at you for trying to copy their paywall stuff. No.
Very, very good. And can you kind of just give us a down, I'll hang up, but what is a paywall and how does that work? And
sure, you don't have to hang up. A paywall, you know, a lot of news sites want you to pay to view the news. They want to believe that they have content that is so good that you would pay to subscribe, just like buying a subscription to a newspaper. So the paywall is designed a lot of news websites will have a certain amount of content that's free to everybody. But if you want the bigger story or you want more detailed stories, then you have to pay them to get behind the paywall. It's just a play on the word firewall. They're blocking you from getting to certain content until you pay to get past the paywall.
All right, but what you do get when you pull it up, you can't go farther. You still can copy that, theoretically.
Sure. Okay. Anything you can see on your computer screen can be copied. Now, there are tools that different websites use to try to block that. For example, my personal blog, you can't right-click and copy and paste anything because I don't want my images stolen. But you can get around that. There are ways to get past that. It's just mostly for the casual content scrapers, so they can't get my stuff. But anything you can see on your screen can be copied. And if you're able to right-click or select the text and then copy it to your clipboard, then chances are they don't have anything in place that's like that. And like Barrett suggested, if you copy that text and try pasting it into a WordPad or Notepad.
Yeah. Just something simple, yeah.
Yeah, Notepad, which does no formatting, because it may be that you're picking up something in the code.
It's got a control character that it thinks is something else, and it's crashing on that,
yeah.
Maybe.
So when you highlight text on a website, you'll get links and you'll get formatting information into that when you copy that to your clipboard. And when you go to paste it into Word, Word is just barfing and it said, I don't like this, and it crashes. It's not something that website's doing to you. So as Barrett mentioned, if you try pasting that into something that doesn't care about formatting, at least to see if you can paste it and see what you're getting.
Fascinating. Yeah. Thank you very much.
All right. Thanks for your call. Bye. All right. So, yeah, I mean, like, for example, Flickr, an image hosting site, they do some things so you can't right click on an image and save it. They have what they call an overlay on the image. It's a transparent GIF. It's a one pixel transparent GIF. So when you right click and copy the image, you're copying the overlay image and not the actual image. But I don't know of any news sites that are doing anything clever like that just yet. Maybe that's coming. All right, Groove House.
Yes.
Who do we have up next?
Up next, we're going to speak with Tony.
Tony, you're on the air with Technology Bites.
Yeah, okay. The other day, I had an electrical transformer blow up in my backyard during all the rain and lightning.
Yeah.
And I've got AT&T slow internet and a modem that it goes into first. And then the modem, I have a wire going to a router in another room, and it's a D-Link, and then to a couple of computers in that room. And my D-Link got fried, but my modem didn't.
Okay.
Does that seem like it would have hit it and not the other one?
Well, you know, depending on how the surge comes into the line and how sensitive the equipment is to the surge, you know, the electricity could have passed through one device and not harmed it and hit the other device, and it just responded badly.
Yeah, okay. They're plugged in different rooms. They're on different circuits. So maybe, yeah, it could have been that the power strip that the other one...
Yeah, I mean, if it came in on the electrical line as opposed to coming over the telecom line, I mean, you could get zapped by lightning either way. Whatever wire, you know, picks up the charge and whatever it's connected to, it can get damaged from a surge.
It's awesome.
Well, the lights still come on a D-Link router. How can I test it? Plug it in and see if it works.
That's pretty much it, yeah. If it doesn't. Yeah. But, you know, you have to simplify your. So you have DSL, right?
Yeah.
And so what exactly is not working right now?
The router. The DSL modem in the main room has a wire that comes to this other room, and that goes into the D-Link router that has one in, four out, and the one in, four out is what's got fried.
One thing you could do is you could hook two devices up to the D-Link. Well, you could hook one up and see if it gets a DHCP address from it. If it doesn't, you could specify an address, put in a second one, specify an address, and see if they can communicate. That'll tell you that side of it. It won't tell you going through it completely and out through the other side, but it'll tell you on the one side. And it'll tell you if it's up enough that it's giving out a DHCP address. You can also see if you can go to the administrative web page of it. That'll tell you if it's up and functioning from a software perspective enough to, you know, be running its web server to give you an administrative web page.
It's kind of funky that the lights are coming on. Usually when something gets zapped, it's, you know, it's kind of down for the count. You could also try a hardware reset. I wonder if that would...
We've disconnected everything, and including wires and Ethernet cables and everything, and then put it back together, and it still didn't work.
But it's also possible, like with my parents' Mac Mini, that... I mean, everything's working fine except that the NIC port. So it's possible that maybe if the electricity like went along the telco line and managed to make it through the DSL modem, either because it had good grounding on certain stuff that kept it, or it just the equipment wasn't as sensitive, and then it went down the Ethernet cable and got to the D-Link and it fried the driver on the NIC for the WAN side, then it could actually boot up and everything could be working, but that one NIC port could be dead.
Okay. Another thing was it asked me to put in my password or something, and I figured out where that was at and typed it in, and it kept saying wrong password.
Have you tried just the default password?
Well, I sort of thought that's what it was.
Okay, so you haven't changed. Okay, you didn't change it from when you got a hold of it?
Right, it's written on the bottom of the D-Link.
But see, there's also, usually on those, there's also somewhere a way to reset it, like a button or something you can hold in when you power it up. You might reset it back to factory defaults, and it would give it that default password.
Just in case, like, a neighbor could, and this is, you know, off chance, in case someone connected to it and changed the password or did something, just because it was, you know, most people know what those passwords are. So if it does come back to life, or if you wind up getting another router, you know, definitely change the password and then just, you know, write it on some tape and put that on the bottom of the router so you don't lose it.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, right.
So there's a
power switch. If you hold it down an extended period of time, is that a hard reboot?
The way you do it, if you look in the back or on the bottom of it, there's going to be a little hole, and usually it's in really, really tiny letters in the plastic. It'll say reset around it. And it's enough to get like a small paper clip through. And if you put a paper clip through there, you'll feel it, the little clicking when you indent it. So usually the way you hard reset, what brand did you say it was?
D-Link.
So the D-Links, I believe, are like this. You actually push it in. You make sure it goes in. You then this is with the power off. Then you then plug the power into the back of it.
While you're still holding it
in. And usually what I'll do is I won't let go. I'll just keep holding it in. And after about 5 or 6 seconds, the lights will start to blink and something will happen. And at that point, you can take it out. And that just did a hard reset. So it should come back up factory default.
So do you reset it with the power on?
No,
so you unplug it.
Yeah.
Unplug the router.
Right.
Find the little hole.
Got it.
Stick in your paperclip. Feel the click. Hold it. Plug the power into the modem. Into the router. Wait till it completely powers up or starts blinking or doing whatever it
does. Which could be like 10 to 15 seconds. Yeah, you might have to hold it.
And then let it out, and hopefully that'll reset it back to factory defaults. So if you have an internet connection, you can take the make and model of your router, and you can go online and find, like, probably somebody has pictures who says, here, do this, 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 and this to reset it. So just say reset, D-Link, model, blah, 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 whatever your model number is, and you'll find some instructions on how to do it.
All right.
If you need to get a computer on, you can always plug a computer directly into the network modem, the DSL modem.
Yeah, I did that, but there's at least 3 units in this room that I wanted to have able to be powered up.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah.
All right, well, good luck.
All right, thank you.
Thank you. All right. All right, well, we're getting close to the top of the hour break that we have to take. So, Garrett, hang on, who's on hold right now to be on the air. We'll get you on in the second half of the show. Do we have a Barrett time?
Luckily, my laid-back attitude towards the show did not stop me from writing a Barrett time. So, yeah, I've got that.
Awesome. So we'll do a station break, we'll do a Barrett time, and then we'll get back to the phone. So if you want to get in the queue to be on the air with Technology Bites, we suggest you call 713-526-5738 and let Groovehouse walk you through the simple, ever uncomplicated process of getting in the queue to be on the air with Technology Bites. All right. Well, I thought I could stretch that out. It's not going so good.
Surprised Pete didn't mention the net neutrality thing. I forget one of the Daily Show guys drove a whole bunch of trolling people.
No. It was the guy from that new HBO show.
Yeah, but he used to be an extra on the Daily Show, I believe. Simon Oliver is his name. John Oliver.
Stewart over the summer.
Yeah, and for what they said, I don't think they came out and said this guy crashed the site, but there were so many comments on there that it was not taking anything for a while. And you can actually go out and see the comments. A lot of them are words you wouldn't want to say in front of like your grandparents, your mom, or a young child. I was really surprised, but they're all out there. Thousands and thousands and thousands.
Now, he got more attention to the net neutrality issue than any of the previous anybody's. His show's actually trying to take it off. He did a really great bit on the death penalty.
This was the first time I tuned in to see it because I heard people talking about it. I kind of thought it was neat. So
yeah, it's like 4 or 5 shows in. So, all right. Well, I can tell by the background music that it's time to take our little break. So we're going to take a little break, bring you some station business, and then we'll come back for Barrett time and phone calls and ice cream.
What?
Finally, Groovehouse reanimates. All it took was the promise of treats.
Treats.
Treats for Groovehouse. Here's your ice cream sandwich and a napkin.
Thank you, Dave. Thank you.
Now come inside the van.
Treats.
So candy. All right, you're listening to Technology Bites. I'm Jay Lee.
I'm Peter Hughes.
I'm Flicted.
I'm Barrett.
And he's...
got treats.
And we'll be back after this.
Lo que está escuchando no es su típica estación. Usted está escuchando Pacifica Radio. Estaciones en todos los Estados Unidos como esta dan una gran alternativa para escuchar. Aquí usted encontrará música como no otra, noticias y programación local. Pero nosotros damos mucho más que esto. Nosotros aceptamos personas de todas edades y culturas para que participen y sean parte de nuestra estación. Nosotros entrenamos nuevos voluntarios para que sirvan la comunidad y sean parte de ella por medio de este. Unas veces por año, estaciones de la comunidad piden su ayuda. Sus contribuciones nos continuarán a ayudar a pertenecer libremente para los años que vienen. Pero no necesita que esperar. Puede hablarnos a cualquier hora y poner su contribución. Gracias por escuchar. Y no se olvide que usted hace este tipo de estación posible. Este mensaje es de parte de Pacifica Radio, KPFT, Houston.
Since 1970, KPFT has been driven by people giving their free time to answer phones, sweep floors, run soundboards, and much more.
Unlike commercial radio, passion, not advertising dollars, fuels the radio you hear.
Do you have a few minutes to lend a hand?
Volunteers come from virtually every walk of life and support our operations at any hour of the day or night.
Call 713-526-4000 to learn more about volunteering at KPFT or visit kpft.org. to download a volunteer application.
If you're on a limited budget and can't afford a pledge right now, volunteering just a few hours a month can qualify you for membership. If you run a business, your effort and materials could be considered a tax write-off for support of this nonprofit radio station.
Again, that's 713-526-4000 or visit kpft.org.
This is commercial-free, listener-sponsored Pacifica Radio, KPFT, Houston.
You're listening to 90.1 FM KPFT Houston. Hey, Barrett, what's happening?
I don't know.
Well, room around town.
We interrupt this skit to bring you
Barrett time! Barrett time! Barrett time!
Yeah. That means it's time for
Barrett time.
Yeah. Anyway, take it away, Barrett.
All right. Where's the ice cream? Okay. I was extremely short on
time. Look over here.
Groovehouse ate it all.
Yeah, why is Groovehouse the only one that gets to ride in the van? And why are your hands so cold? So I was, it's extremely short on time today, so I had to hastily hack together a Barrett time, which actually works thematically. As what was quite possibly the world's first hack took place on this day in 1903, a first-gen hacker, as it were. The term white
Tracer hat,
yeah, the term white hat could also be applied here, but really this falls more in line with the MIT notion of clever hacks. So here's a short poem that describes what happened. There was a young fellow named Neville who purportedly worked for the devil. Okay, no, wait, that's not it. Okay, there once was a man named Marconi, who got credited with inventing the radio when we really all know that it was Tesla's work that made it all possible.
Did you say Radioni?
Radioni. Yeah, I got a little off track there. I'm just trying to keep us out of Nantucket right now. there once was a man named Marconi who sent British physicist John Ambrose Fleming to London to demonstrate a long-range wireless communication system during a lecture at the Royal Institution, London. So I hope that wasn't too racy or too rhymey for anyone. Marconi, who was in Cornwall at the time, different part of England, was to send a message to the Royal Institution. Okay, the message was transcribed in London by a Morse printer. When the time for the demonstration came, one word started to repeat itself in Morse over and over and over. The word? Rats.
Red rum.
No, it was rats. Just rats. 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 So it quickly became what one audience member described as a fantastic doggerel and emitted something along the lines of, I think this is cool to say over the radio, get ready on the dump button just in case. There was a young fellow of Italy who diddled the public quite prettily. And a few more lines completed the poem, but I was unable to find any more than this committed to paper. I think they were fairly polite in 1903, but they did write the first two lines. The machine continued to spit out all sorts of nonsense with the occasional line or two of Shakespeare thrown in until the presenter spied an all-too-innocent face in the crowd and knew immediately that it was neither scientific sabotage nor drunk wireless operators in Cornwall to blame for the issue, but rather their colleague, Dr. Neville Maskelyne. So upon hearing the lecture and the claim that, quote, the two instruments would be so arranged that no other person could prevent a message from Cornwall from reaching the lecturer, end quote, Neville decided that he would hack the system and have a bit of fun with some scientific folk that may be taking themselves a bit too seriously. It worked brilliantly, though not everyone was entertained, so he actually hacked into that. So, which is completely different from the Geek Gathering, where everybody is entertained, everybody has a good time. So that's right, not just a clever hack, the June installment of the Technology Bites Geek Gathering. It's happening this Friday at Cone's White excuse me, Cone's Wine, Art, all colors, Rainbow Coalition, Wine, Art, Darts, Beer, Wine Geeks, et cetera, ellipses, you get it. Things get started a little after 7 at 2808 Milam at Drew in Midtown Houston. You don't need to bring anything other than a geeky attitude to attend, but don't let that deter you from bringing out any tech that you'd like to play with, work on, or have looked at. This is probably the perfect time to point out that a preposition is something you should never end a sentence with. It's also important to note that I believe I have yet another question to which 42 is the answer. So this is especially relevant as we've just celebrated Towel Day early last week. So 42 is the answer. The question, how many pockets does KD5's new vest have? That kind of boggles the mind, but I think it's correct. You'll have to come out in person to verify the count for yourself. I like the idea of that many pockets, but that's 41 more places for me to misplace things that I really, really need. So that's it for this Hack Together Pocket of Misplaced Knowledge, and that's that for Barrett time.
So what do we know about KD5's jacket?
42 pockets.
Where did you learn this?
On the vest maker's website. It's one of the vests that where you can put like an iPad and an iPhone and you route all the wires. It's a Scott E vest or something like that, yeah.
Of all things, Cynthia found the Scott E vest online and became enamored of it. And they were having a sale for like 50% off for Mother's Day. And so she got one.
Did she show you the Scott E vest? She turned that on to you?
She turned me on to
the
it.
The teacher has become the master.
I'm telling you.
I'm sorry, the student has become the teacher.
She got the women's Scott E vest red trench coat.
Oh, that works for me. She travels in a red coat, I've seen it.
Yeah, so she's got a new red coat for travel. It's got a pocket that will hold an iPad. I don't know if it has 42 pockets. I'll have to see if we can count.
There are a couple different versions, but yeah, I think they make something I think that gets upwards of 100 pockets, but that's a full-on like trench coat with a whole bunch of other stuff in there. But I believe the vest does have 42 because that number works out.
I got to find out. You know, but of course, for Mother's Day, they weren't offering any of the men's jackets on sale. And I'll be curious to see how many pockets she utilizes on these on our upcoming trip because she'll be taking it to Iceland. But it's also it's a great way to not have to carry on a bunch of hand luggage. I mean, if you do,
I'll say the TSA may hate that.
Did she get the travel vest?
I'm trying to see where
the Quest vest has 42 pockets for women. The travel vest has 17.
She got. Let's see. They should have this broken down by. Now she didn't get the vest. She got the trench coat. The women's trench coat, which only has 18 pockets.
Still a lot of pockets.
But the 18th pocket is the whole bottom half of the trench coat.
Can you just put one shotgun or two shotguns in the shotgun pocket?
All right, 713-526-5738. I see we have a call in the queue, so we're going to take that call. And, yeah, I mean, they had it. I mean, because the women's trench coat is pretty pricey. I can't say the price on the air, but... it is very pricey if you'll look here.
I found it.
Yeah, so she got it for about half off of that.
That's half off of anything is a good deal.
Yeah. Well, it's not worth what they're asking for.
As long as it's like the first Saturday after the something.
When is Mother's Day again?
All right.
So the first Sunday after the first geek gathering in May?
It's pretty well made, too. It's actually a good looking coat. So, you know, as far as trench coats go. And anyway, Brew House.
Yes.
I see we have a call in the queue.
Yes, we do.
Are you through eating your ice cream?
Who got ice cream? I haven't gotten any yet.
Stop complaining and get back in the van.
All right, 713-526-5738. We got one call in the queue which we're going to go to, but we invite you to call in tonight. 713-526-KPFT. Brew House, who do we have?
Up next on the show, we are going to speak with Garrett.
Garrett, you're on the air with Technology Bytes.
Hey, guys.
Hey.
Earlier on in the show, you had mentioned how laptops are getting thinner and thinner, and someone made a crack at eventually we're going to look at a laptop that's only as thin as paper. My sister brought up a good point on this one. Short of wireless hard drives, if these things keep getting smaller and smaller, do we have any new storage devices coming out?
Well, you have solid state memory. which is getting smaller and smaller. You got to have higher speed internet connections always available everywhere you go, so you're going to probably see more data going into the cloud. So
there'll be some breakthrough that just, you know, somehow multiplies the amount of density you can get into a single part of storage.
There's that whole memristor thing, too. Those new chips, I mean, they keep being rumored, and eventually they'll happen, too.
There's been tests and experiments done with storing 700 terabytes of data in DNA. So you could have your data in your body.
Biological computing.
Yeah.
I want to sign up for that.
There's the whole William Gibson wet works thing, you know, the possibility that it'll be embedded in your body.
I mean, by the time things get so small to the point that you're talking about, you know, they're 15 or 20 years, so I don't think it'll happen all that quickly. There'll be some new storage medium, or everything will be, like, you know, totally cloud-based. You won't really have to carry around personal storage devices. It'll just go straight over the wire.
Yeah, because what you're seeing is online storage grow in size for the free stuff. It's getting cheaper for the massive storage. So that's going to continue to evolve as data goes into the cloud. So the only real problem with that is having a high enough speed and a constant enough connection to be able to access that data. And with mobile broadband being what it is, you could conceivably have a device within, you know, like a phone, but the size of a computer screen instead of a phone that could be rolled up or even folded up. Who knows? It could be a chip. It could be projection. It could be 3D projection.
I think right now I read something, I think it was Ars Technica a day or two ago, and they're talking about, like, of all the devices that could possibly have an IP address, less than 1% of them actually do. So they're talking about all these devices that haven't even woken up yet. So when we're talking about, you know, how do you get data from one point to another, you've got to go through Verizon, you've got to go through Comcast, you've got to go through a big provider, but give it another 10 or 15 years when everything talks to everything else. Networking may be the way that things go, where you don't have to go through someone else. I could hop to Jay, to Groovehouse, to get data that Flicted has. So things might go that way, too.
Well, thank you all for answering that. She was thoroughly entertained with the DNA aspect.
Yeah, well, I mean, I'm sure it's going to get a lot weirder. I mean, it's coming in the way, I mean, if you think about what's going on right now and the way that, I mean, looking at the technology you probably have access to right now, think back 10 years, think back 20 years, and I could kind of imagine, but I couldn't really. I mean, I had no idea. You know, I remember thinking that, you know, it was always going to be a matter of buying some giant clunky box for several thousand dollars.
But they'll always get faster or cooler, but yeah, it's always going to be the same form factor.
Not necessarily smaller. So watching everything reduce in size, I mean, when you think about the fact that a 5 megabyte hard drive used to take up a space the size of your living room not that long ago, 40 years ago, and now you've got terabytes of data, you know, in a device that, you know, is no bigger than a shoebox.
Yeah, phones, I think, might supplant laptops, because the whole premise behind the idea of carrying a laptop is that you need, like, a large area to look at. Something's got to display information in front of you, and then you need, like, an input device, like a keyboard, and that's what kind of shapes the form factor. So that's why you can only go thinner. You can't eradicate that. But you get into, like, you know, Google Glass, whether it may or may not be Google Glass, but, like, something you just slip on to where you don't need the display anymore, that part of the laptop, and then you've got another input device where maybe it just looks at your hands. You don't need a physical keyboard, and then the idea of a laptop's gone.
Right, so you could conceivably have a computer, a full-blown computer, in a device the size of or smaller than your phone, have some kind of wireless projection device that could be spread out like a piece of saran wrap, and all of the data could be on there, and that could be folded.
Yeah, or like people have reading glasses. Maybe you've got surfing glasses or computer glasses, and that, you know, that's how you see. Who knows? But it's usually there's disruptive technologies, and that just means, you know, it changes everything. No one can really see where it's coming. So we can make guesses, but it's who knows what it's going to look like in 15 years.
Yeah, I used to see people with the holographic keyboard projected off of a pen.
Yeah, that's out there now. You can get that for, you know, probably under $100 in some instances.
Well, thank you very much, and keep being awesome.
All right. Well, thanks for your call, Garrett. Have a good night.
You too.
All right. 713-526. Can you do it?
Well, doesn't want to hang up.
There you go. Looks like you got it. 713-526-5738. I remember, you know, I remember thinking long before the iPod came out, you know, that, you know, records obviously were going to go away when CDs had come out, and could see that all going digital. And I thought to myself that eventually you'll just have all of your, you'll have not only your music library, but the potential to have all the music in a device that sits on your desk. You know, and I was way off on that because it's smaller than that now. But, you know, I've learned not to be terribly surprised. The only thing that continues to surprise me in technology is the funky, weird stuff that in the social media realm that seems to catch on, that's making all the money right now, like your Snapchats and your Instagrams. And
World Lens still kind of freaks me out.
Does it?
Yeah, it's still in the future.
For those that don't know, World Lens is an app you can get for your iPhone and I believe for the Android as well.
Yeah.
And it's free now, and it's called World Lens, and it uses the camera of your phone, and you point it at text, and it converts the text in real time to a different language.
It matches the color of the font, the text, the color of the font, the kind of the style of the font,
the size of the font, and the background color. So if it's a stop sign, you know, it'll change it to, like, if you have it going English to Spanish, it'll change stop to alto.
Yeah.
And
it'll still look like a stop sign that's
red with white text.
It's not like it's augmented reality in the strictest sense of the word, but it's not like, you know, it's kind of in the same area as the thing you're looking at. It actually replaces the text. It covers it.
It's pretty weird. I mean, it's cool, but it's kind of seems from the future.
Well, there's also talk of real-time translation. Where,
I think Skype was talking about that.
Where you could actually be, Skype was talking about it. I think it was in the info shot last week, maybe, was it, Pete? We're talking about, you know, you could be talking and the software in real time would translate what you're saying into another language.
Yes.
And so that's pretty
C.
I mean, we.
Siri.
Yeah.
Siri.
Yeah. Okay, sure.
Forget about it.
That's so it. Here's another one. Did any of y'all, like, buy into the Kickstarter for Oculus Rift?
No.
That's I didn't care about it at first because everybody's like, oh, it's a gaming headset, you know, VR gaming headset. But Wired actually had an article about it that came out in this month's Wired magazine. They had a big write-up about it. And reading that article, like, it actually seems a lot more interesting to me than it did before, because it really sounds like they've cracked some of the major problems with every type of past VR. And of course Mark Zuckerberg just bought them for $2 billion or whatever, but it's also just a crazy story, because the guy that started it was a homeschooled kid from California, and when he was 18, before he was 18, he started repairing iPhones and computers, making money, and he was building his own computers. And then he just thought, he had video games, and he thought, man, why doesn't anybody have a good VR, you know, headset? And so he just started making one, and he was on these forum, like a VR gaming forum, and he started posting, like, his updates of what he was working on. And the guy, I forgot his name, from Austin or wherever, that wrote the Doom engine. And
John Carmack?
Yeah. He was also on the forum, and he saw him posting about it, and so at some point he messaged him, and he's like, hey, man, you think I could take a look at this? And the kid had two prototypes, and he just sent him one. No NDA, no documents, no whatever. So he started playing with it. And basically, he got around a lot of stuff, and then the guy wrote code to, because he was using cheap magnifying glasses to over the things, to make the image look bigger, but he had one big difference was he also had wide field of vision. One of the big problems with VR in the past has always been a dissonance between what you see with your eye and what your ear telling your balance tells you what's going on, and so a lot of people will get sick. So they still had some of that problem, but then Valve also got involved, and some of their guys were working on it, and I think it was the Valve guys actually cracked that. So they told the guy who is now the CEO of Oculus to come up there. So he went up there, and he's evidently well known for being super sensitive to that disconnect. And he put on the thing, and they brought it up, and he looked around kind of, and he'd go to the next demo, and he wasn't getting sick. And he went through the whole demo, and he was like, okay, do it again. And so they went through it again, and at the end he took them off, and he's like, okay, I feel disoriented because I've been in this virtual reality. But how long was it? And they were like, it was like 45 minutes that he was in it and never got sick, never had a problem. So it seems legitimately very interesting that it might actually do some, be able to do some really cool stuff in the future once people start developing software for it.
A lot of people have gotten behind it. Like, I was looking yesterday just browsing around, and someone took up, you know, the Studio Ghibli, some of the Japanese cool anime from the movie Spirited Away. They recreated the entire boiler room from the movie, and you can go and wander around and interact with things, and it just random people, you know, creating really, really cool things. This looks like it's going to be kind of like how you got the Arduino movement, you know, with just, you know, basic microcontrollers and stuff. This looks like, you know, what Arduino did for open source hardware. This looks like what it's going to do for, you know, everyone having access to VR,
well,
which
he,
is really
he,
neat.
He'd gotten to when his name is Palmer Lucky, I think, is the kid's name. He's 21 now. He got to like the fourth version, and so he was going to sell kits that people could build themselves for like $300 or something. But then whatever happened, and so he decided to do Kickstarter, and so he went to Kickstarter, and the day before he was going to start the Kickstarter campaign, he got nervous that it wasn't going to get funded, and so he dropped it from $500,000 to $250,000 to get funding, and at the end of the campaign, it had gotten over $2.4 million. So, and I think that was to, I mean, some of it probably was just to give him money to help, but some of it was to get, you know, one or whatever, so...
I thought about it, but yeah, I was recently burned. I just, think on the leap, I had a bitter taste.
At the time, I just didn't.
Might have been before.
I just, everything I'd heard about it was all related to gaming, and so I didn't really care about it. But after reading the article, it sounds like it could be way beyond that, just because of the quality of it, and it gives you full immersion, full field of vision. You don't get any of the like disorientation, and well, you probably get some disorientation just from being in VR, but. You don't get the sickness from...
Yeah, it's cool they worked that out. I know one of the very, very early prototypes included an air sickness bag hanging from the nose piece. So it's good they were able to work through that.
Hmm. So anyway, that's something that's coming out that I think is like future... It's not going to be super expensive.
They've already got a second version on it, apparently. That's something was on Slashdot a week or two ago. They're already kind of shopping around like the second gen... of that, which should be really cool. I kind of want one.
So I think, yeah, if you can get to the point where somebody can write, like, basically kind of creating the Snow Crash kind of internet virtual reality where there's, like, a virtual city, you know, and communication with avatars and that kind of stuff. I think that would be really interesting. Any kind of like communication, like you call somebody and communicate with them, and it looks as if you're in the same room and stuff like that. That's
teleconferencing.
Interesting application.
Looks like my bad. It's already they've announced it. You can actually pre-order the development kit too. So the next gen Oculus, it won't be, you know, when it comes out in production, it may not look exactly like this. But if you want to go ahead and get that next gen, which I think is better resolution, better wear, you know, higher, better processor, you can get in line to get one.
Well, the other thing is that as we continue to digitize our world, the virtual reality aspect has the potential to where you can recreate, you know, major locations around the world, art museums or even libraries, to where you could go in and interact. And you could, everything would be replicated in so much detail, it would be indistinguishable from looking at the real thing.
That's what the new version has. It's got a built-in latency tester, so that lag between, like, you know, what people would feel or what would actually happen, like if they move their head and then the display takes like a half second to move, that would be disorienting in there. They've got a hard real-time system that makes sure everything's in sync, so what you do actually happens right then, right there.
I know one of the things is that originally they had things outside of the device to figure out when you were moving and stuff, and but now they got it to where it's a camera inside the device that uses external things as cues to know when you're moving.
Yeah, for the positional tracking. Yeah, this new one looks really cool.
It's in.
For those listening at home, the Oculus Rift, right? O C
ULUS.
ULUSRIFT.
Oculus is the company. Rift is the product.
If you go to oculusvr.com, that's got all the intel you could want.
But the original version, part of what makes it better now also is he went from, he was using just like regular things. And like he made a version where one that was like, it was so big because he wanted the field of vision. It was so big on the front that he had to put a counterweight on the back to be on your head. But he ended up figuring out that instead of having two screens, he could just use, I think it was actually a Samsung 4S screen, and split it and put the image on both so he could have it closer and it was high quality. And then so now I think they've gone to AMOLED screens. Yeah, yeah. So it's a
AMOLED.
Super high quality screens. And it's, I don't think now they're having to source parts directly like through Samsung or whatever. They're big enough and have enough money, specifically through Facebook now. They don't have to actually try to go and talk to VCs to try to get funding. They don't have to worry about their profit margins directly anymore because they're funded through Facebook. So that's one of the things they talked about in the article, is when they first heard Zuckerberg was interested, they were like, oh, yeah, well, okay, he's going to want to figure out how he can like put feeds in it for Facebook. But they said when he showed up, it wasn't really like Facebook Zuckerberg, because that's what everybody says. He's like always about Facebook. They're like, no, it was like visionary Zuckerberg. And he was talking about all these cool things that could be done with it. And over a period of like a week or two, they finally were just like, okay, you know, like I think he's legit. And I think this actually could be really good for us.
Well, and as the technology evolves, I mean, right now I picture Oculus Rift as a clunky helmet-like device that you have to wear. And as you get that streamlined with some kind of projection technology or something that allows you to have, you know, basically a film screen or like something so thin, it's not like a real monitor, not like these two hard monitors. You could have this curved thing in front of your face. And if that can somehow be made to become a display.
Or it gets smaller and smaller and they just actually like inject it straight onto your cornea.
And then eventually inject it directly into your brain.
The InfoShot project.
InfoShot Riff.
What's our phone number?
713-526-5738. 713-526-KPFT. I would imagine some kind of wireless contact lenses might be coming.
Mm, mm-hmm. That would be cool.
And then it would be some kind of implant that you could put into your eyeballs that you could just turn on and off with an electrical switch, so you go into gaming mode.
I still think it would be cool. Like, I still like the idea of, from like Neuromancer, like William Gibson, like the girl that had the like chrome implants or under her skin inside in front of her eyes that gave her heads up display. I still think that would be cool.
There was just a
But I like covering my face with my hand, so it's kind of like that all the time.
There was a story I was just read. I think, it was a state government situation where there's a bill that's going through the House that they're trying to regulate body modifications.
Hmm.
And let me see if I can find the article.
I could see that to some degree, as far as like they don't want people getting like
dental implants,
hatchet jobs, like from people that aren't qualified to do them.
Let's say Arkansas state legislature passes bill to ban certain body modifications. So they're saying non-traditional piercings and tattoos. You know, not like traditional piercings or tattoos. They're talking about like they don't want people putting stuff under their skin. Not that they don't want – it sounds to me like it's not so much that they don't want people doing that, but they want to regulate it where if you're going to be doing surgery, it's a medical procedure.
Right.
Because you have people that are just, you know, opening up shop. And
come on in. We'll put an RFID chip in here.
We ain't got no anesthesia because we're not licensed.
Just bite down on this.
Here's some whiskey. Bite down on this stick.
Yeah, I'm sure in Arkansas that kind of high technology type stuff is a real danger everywhere.
I embedded my garage door opener in my thigh.
Apparently you can turn.
I am a robot.
Apparently you can turn yourself into a giant political jag off with no regulation.
Well, I just wonder what it would do to that girl. Who's the girl who's putting magnets under her skin? And
the one in England?
Yeah.
Oh, what is her name? I can't think of it now. She's
the crazy body mod.
Yeah.
The cybos.
And she started having cyber some issues from it.
Yeah.
Like she started having, and it was probably from that. She started having like some hallucination problems.
Paperclip sticking to her in the office.
Flying across her.
I can't think of her name. I actually haven't seen anything about her in probably a year or more.
Well, did you? I don't know if it's the same one, but there was the one girl who does the body modifications, and she just had Dos X. What's that? What's that cyberpunk game? Dos.
Oh yeah.
D E A U.
Oh, Deus Ex.
Deus Ex. Yeah, she had the entire game on a chip implanted into her body.
Well, she had it where it would do NFC. So if somebody put their stuff up, it would give them a license to the game or something. I forgot. Something to the game. But, yeah, I watched the video of her doing it, and they shoved it in between her thumb and her index finger, like, up into her. I watched them inject it. It was kind of painful looking.
But it's weird because I'm really good friends with one of the guys who developed that game. And so when he found out that happened, he's like, he doesn't really know how to respond to it. It's Zoe Quinn.
Yeah.
So.
It's a lot better. The near-field communication stuff is a lot better because there was a guy that put in RFID into his hand, which is cool, but that's like a single number embedded on a chip, and if someone ever got that, you can't really change it. At least she's got something that's programmable. So that's a step in the right direction.
She's more open source than that guy.
But that wasn't the British chick.
No, this woman seems
relatively
sane.
This one was actually in a tattoo. I think she works at a shop, but she went into a tattoo body mod shop. That's where you could tell. The other girl, it sounds like the British girl, she's like, I drink some London Beefeater gin or something and then like go into my kitchen and cut myself and put something inside my body. Like, and she had like four or five body mods. I cannot remember her name though.
All right, if you want to be on the air to talk with us tonight on Technology Bites, we've got about half hour left in the show. We're having a great time conversating amongst ourselves, but we'd be happy to entertain your questions or comments at 713-526-5738. That's 713-526-KPFT if you want to call in this evening. Right now, all the lines are open. And Groovehouse, all he wants is ice cream. So give us a call, 713-526-5738. Yeah, technology, the thing that bothers me, I guess bother, maybe that's the wrong word. That
gets under your skin?
No, I mean, there is so much cool tech happening, you know, whether it's an Oculus Rift gaming platform or, you know, smartphones, new camera technology. There's just a ton of stuff that's really cool that's happening.
Have you seen like the medical, like supported walking, like replacement limbs?
Yes.
Touch sensitivity on the fingertips of replacement limb. That stuff is crazy. Like,
what I'm talking about is more on the consumer level, that there's just so much out there, but I can't afford it. You know, I just can't get everything I want because now it's really, you know, I mean, I didn't care about, you know, fancy cars or having a big house or any of that nonsense, but the tech stuff really appeals to me and I'd like to get some of it.
You want a curved TV, don't you?
There's a thing that I really want. There are two things that I want that the price point is just beyond what I can justify, and it has to do with creating virtual reality, because, you know, ultimately having the ability to view or participate in virtual reality is one thing, but the ability to create it outside of doing it digitally, and if you do it digitally, that's one thing, but I want to do it photographically. And there's a company that makes this device which basically holds either 6 or 8 GoPro cameras, and it puts them all into this one thing, and then it takes all the photos simultaneously or does video, and then allows you to do 360 degree panoramas. You don't have to take each individual shot to cover each quadrant. It takes all the shots simultaneously.
Do you wear it on your head?
Put it on a pole. There's a great There's a great video of a guy who had one on a stick and used the video stitching software. You don't see the stick, but it's on top of a roller coaster. It's going through a roller coaster, and it's really cool. But the cost is the device itself without the GoPro cameras is like $400 for the contraption.
How many cameras does it hold?
It holds six cameras. Six GoPro cameras.
You can get the low end GoPros.
You could, but why would you go there?
$150.
It's
going
to be that much, so you should get the.
But either way, you're still, you know, several hundred bucks a pop for your GoPro cameras, plus the software you need to be able to stitch the video.
It's just another lens, Jay. It's just another lens. Just get it.
Well, but see, here's the other thing that bothers me with the way that tech's going. Is that whatever I plunk down, there's another company that's making this, they make this thing, it's just a ball with a bunch of cameras in it. And it's actually, it's pre-order, it's not super high resolution, it's not super great, but it's basically this ball, and you turn it on and you throw it up in the air, and it takes all the shots at once.
Panano, yeah, I think is the one.
Panano.
Or Panano.
Panano. And,
You say Panano, he says.
I say Panano.
It's a play on panorama, so it's Panano. Panano, be all right. Spell Panano. So, panini ball.
Do they make bread?
But,
Panano, yeah.
Okay.
Who knows?
So
yeah.
That's a cheap way to do what I want to do. But then I look at the GoPro solution, and that's a better way to go. But it's such a novel thing. It's not. I don't think anything I want to spend the money on right now. But beyond that, is that in another couple of years, all this stuff's going to be even cooler and cheaper. So that's what bothers me about tech. That's what I can talk about.
That's all tech, right? You have to jump in at some point.
No, you're right. It is. But because there's so many new things coming out in different areas. I mean, there's two cameras on the market right now beyond the one that I have now that I'd like to have them both. You know.
Do you want a red?
Technology has you.
I would love to have a red. Don't get me thinking about that stuff. That's crazy. But there's a higher end devices that Nodal Ninja, who does the racks and stuff for the kit for the Pano stuff that I do with my DSLR, I've got a digital device now. It's a higher end thing with the cameras built in, shoots in all directions, and high res. It's kind of like what's on top of the Google car, but it's even better than what Google has, and the price point on that's way through the roof. Like, yeah, I want
ironically, since it goes on top of a Google car, you said the price is through the roof.
Oh, I didn't bum, mean bum. That. Good catch. I was clever and I didn't even know. But, you know, man, that's the frustrating thing. It's like, so you have to kind of choose the way to go. So you see people that come up with something like the, you know, the people who come up with Oculus Rift or they invent something, then they get all the money they want. They could do any of this. They could buy any of it. So I got to... As a consumer, it's frustrating because you just look at, well, I want to buy this thing, and it'll be cheaper next year and better next year.
So just you can come up with a scam Kickstarter to get enough money to buy all those things you want.
That's the thing I need to, you know, there was that one guy who he took a lot of heat because he went on Kickstarter and he wanted people to fund his next camera purchase. And he was a professional photographer. He made his living, but he wanted some new camera gear, so he fired up a Kickstarter. And if you read it, it was actually not bad because he was offering real legitimate things. So, like, if you put in this amount of money in the Kickstarter, you'd get a photo shoot, or you'd get this, or you get that. But photographers went nuts, like, hated on him and stuff. Like, you're a photographer. How can you ask people for money to buy you camera gear? If you're not good enough to make the money shooting your pictures, you shouldn't buy it. So
they're upset they didn't think to do that first.
No doubt. Now, I've seen a couple of photographers do Kickstarters to get either funded for a photo shoot they wanted to do or buy equipment. I'm not a big fan. I'm not a big fan of handouts, unless you're giving the money to me. Then I'm a huge fan. Anyway, so that's my frustration. It's like, and you know, I looked at last year, or was it earlier this year, plunked down my money on my new laptop and my new desktop, and now I just have to sit, you know, quietly and watch. And you know, it's the big screen TV dilemma, isn't it? I mean, that's really all it is, except that it's more than just big screen TVs.
Because you don't have a curved one yet.
I still love my TV, my smart TV. I've done some, I mean, I've got my Mac, I've got my iMac set up as a streaming media, an HDLNA media streaming player, and I can drop my videos in there and my music onto that computer. It scans, and my LG TV has the client for the software I'm using built into it.
Nice.
And it, so the server software goes online, indexes whatever you've got, gets all like who started it, what the cover artwork is for it, whatever it is, and I can see that on my TV screen. So I'm watching, you know, I've downloaded all these things off of YouTube, episodes from BBC's QI, and it tells you who the hosts are, what the subject matter is, and all that, and it just plays directly to the TV over the network.
See, my I've got a Samsung Plasma. And it's got, like, the Yahoo widgets built into it and stuff. But it was one of the first generations to have all that stuff. Yeah, it has the equivalent of, like, a IBM PC AT in it or something. It's horrible. Like,
should get a math coprocessor for that.
Yeah. I don't even use them because it's worthless. Like, I just have all that functionality in peripheral devices like the Blu-ray player or the Apple TV or whatever.
I was using mine up until about 2 weeks ago, and then everything but Hulu on it broke, and then I went into forums, and I've had it for about 2.5 years,
TV?
Maybe the big TV that I brought to the Maker Faire that we got kind of specifically for that, and I went in there and started reading forums, and apparently it's got hard-coded DNS addresses, and those DNS servers don't necessarily exist, or the routes to them aren't good, so, and they're not doing anything to update it, but there's a way you can go in and do some things to update them. But I'm like, man, this is the first time, you know, I'm it's almost abandonware is kind of how I feel. And it's got issues now because it can't resolve where it needs to go get the updates, can't really go update itself. So, yeah.
I think that's going to happen to a lot of
Yeah.
Hardware.
Yeah, this is a major brand.
That happened to, like, at least one, maybe two generations of DVD and Blu-ray players I had where, and actually my TV as well. Like, I get it. I check for a firmware update. Oh, there's a firmware update. A month or two later, oh, there's a firmware update. 3 or 4 months later, oh, yeah, there's a firmware update. Never again. Nope. After about a year cycle, they've moved on. They want to make a curved TV, and now they don't care about mine anymore.
Yeah, and as far as you know, firmware goes, if you've got apps that are completely standalone, that's awesome. But the first time you start putting in apps that have to communicate with other services, like things to watch streaming, you know, streaming movies, streaming music, getting on Facebook, if you don't keep updating, you know, those applications on the TV, those services are going to change their APIs over a few years, and you're going to be forced out of all the services. That's another big thing, too, is that hackers are starting to look, as the bad kind of hackers are starting to look at these platforms for that very reason, because all these security vulnerabilities that everyone else is patching for, they still exist on TVs. They still exist on set-top boxes. They can, you know, exist on possibly consoles.
Because they're running Java.
Yeah.
Phone's ringing. Phone's about to ring. Yeah. You know, with the media server, it's Plex, if you're interested in looking into it for doing DLNA, HDLNA, or DLNA, I mean.
Wasn't that the dinosaur that would eat the leaves?
Plexosaurus TV?
Well, it's Plex, and it's a great piece of software. There's a couple of, you know, you have to figure a few things out. It's not super intuitive in some areas, but, man, it's great. I mean, if you're torrenting all your Game of Thrones, it'll index them all.
What?
No, we're not suggesting you pirate copyrighted material. But, you know, there's a lot of public domain stuff out there that you can get and you can download. Or if you're recording off your own TV and converting it to media files that you want to store for later, it's a great service. It works really well. And I'm inclined to think that the TV doesn't have to have that many built-in apps or that much capability, because now with your ability to throw, at least in the Apple world, the ability to throw your screen.
Yeah, I just gotten lazy with this. I actually ordered another Chromecast just for the TV, just so I could have it.
Yeah.
But, you know, it was nice when I didn't have to worry about a second device booting it up, but I could just have the single remote control and everything would just work.
I don't know if y'all followed, I think Peter mentioned it in the news, but WWDC, the Apple WWDC, some of the stuff they just announced is a lot of, like, closer integration of devices so that it's the same kind of concept as, like, tabs are available on the other automatically, like, through the cloud. You don't have to, like, throw anything. It's just, it's there.
Yeah, continuity.
Right. So they didn't announce a new iPhone, did they?
No. That I would bet, is in the fall.
Would the new operating system is released?
Could be. I mean, basically, they seem to be in the pattern of doing it in the fall and looking at, it sounds like some of the people that are making cases and that stuff, that it looks like, you know, it's the right part of the cycle to where it'd be around September when they'd announce it.
Yosemite.
Yes.
All right, Groovehouse, I see we have a call in the queue.
Yes, we do.
Who is it and what do they want?
Up next on the show.
What do they want?
I'm not going to tell you what they want. They're going to tell you what they want.
All right.
All right, next up, we're going to speak with Arvin.
Arvin, you're on the air with Technology Bytes.
Thank you, thank you. Do you know of any exploits, previous or current, where somebody can get to the UVerse DSL modem and in conjunction with some kind of telephone phishing campaign, change the parameters in there and hijack the setup and hijack the password and hijack data going back and forth, say, from a Mac to the outside world?
What do you mean by with the telephone part?
Well, okay, in conjunction with this person having had their modem changed, they've been getting calls to try to confirm and reset their passwords on things that don't necessarily have to do only with the UVerse account.
Have they mentioned the UVerse account? Have they offered to change the password on the modem?
Those kinds of things, and you know, telling them that they had to change it, and they got compromised through brokerage accounts, PayPal accounts, bank accounts.
So they specifically said your UVerse modem has been compromised. You need to change the password.
No, maybe they didn't say that. I'm using the word compromise.
They said
there's something wrong. You've got to change.
Who is they? Yeah.
There's somebody. There's a friend of mine that is now going to switch from AT&T UVerse to Comcast.
Who called them and told them they had issues?
People from all over the place at different times of the day and night.
I mean, not identifying themselves as UVerse, not identifying themselves as any one particular entity, just as...
I guess they said I'm from AT&T. Who knows? I mean, I wasn't when this happened.
Well, if you don't know, we need to know. It would help us to know. But here's what I do know. There are scam artists out there that are calling people, cold calling, and saying that, you know, your computer's infected with viruses, you need to do this. You need to do that, and they try to get control of your computer, and then they show you a bunch of stuff that looks really scary, and then they get you to pay your money to fix the problem. And there's scams going on like that. So whether or not this guy's UVerse modem was compromised...
The thing is that is possible because there have been exploits for DSL modems, remote exploits. I think 2WIR had some exploits available to them, and then D-Link.
But if you're getting a call from somewhere...
They're probably phishing. They're probably saying, I bet a lot of people in this area have UVerse. I bet, you know, hey, go to your UVerse modem, do this, turn it over, you know, get the password, go to this address, do this. I bet they walk them through getting into it from the inside
and maybe change something.
So it doesn't sound to me like...
Probably
like,
not compromised.
It has actually been compromised, but if he went along with whatever these phone callers are saying, then they would... Go ahead and compromise it for them.
You would do it for them.
You might. I don't know. Like, tell them that you're doing it, but don't do it.
Yeah.
And give them false information, and then when it doesn't work, see how they react. If they get frustrated,
but I would be curious. I mean, I would be curious to know what the callers are actually saying.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean,
if the calls continue to come in, maybe have them record the call or just take some notes. And, you know, just, you know, at this point, since we know they're probably bogus and they're definitely wasting, you know, your friend's time, just have your friend just kind of be slow about things and ask a lot of redundant questions. Or a good source is, you know, go read, you know, scamming the Nigerian, you know, 419 scammers or 49 scammers. You can go read stuff about that and see how people have led them on and kind of, you know, do a reverse attack and just see what's going on and let us know.
Well, you know, I mean, a lot of I don't know that I agree with Barrett on that. Just saying, you know, man,
depends on your skill level.
Hack the hackers.
Yeah.
You don't know who you're messing with, but, you know, what I have seen people do is, you know, try to find out what it is they're trying to do. And as they said, you know, well, we need you to go to your modem and do this, or we need you to go to your computer and do that. And you can just say, okay, I'm doing it, and then see where they're trying to take you. But, again, without knowing who it is that's calling, I mean, it's possible. If you don't know the answer to this question, I really can't answer what you're asking for, because is it possible that UVerse is calling this guy and saying, hey, we've detected a problem with your gear. We think it's compromised. We need you to do this. I've never heard of it happening, but certainly it's possible that UVerse is calling him up and saying, hey, you've got a problem. So, and you mentioned that you're kind of all over the place with the things you were mentioning, like PayPal and this and that.
Basically, they got PayPal transactions that they didn't initiate, and they got some real wire transfers, you know, for a few thousand dollars.
So that sounds like they're saying this, or this really happened?
No, this really happened.
Okay, so he's definitely had his computer or his bank accounts taken over or had
temporarily for a day or two at a time.
Yeah, we were talking. Pete talked about that early on in the news. There is a big hacking push where people are able to compromise bank accounts and things like that using software that gets into the computer. But I need to know more details on what's actually happening.
I doubt someone would steal money from them and then call back and try to extort more money from them, because that just seems like a good way to get caught.
If your computer got hacked and they got all your information, so they might have your phone number, so they might call you and try to offer you this. So they might have your PayPal information. They might kind of contact you and exploit. I don't know. It would be better if we were talking to the person that this happened to. It's good that you're friendly enough to try to find some information, but it's a little too vague to be able to assist much with, and I apologize
for that. Yeah, that's okay. Well, their solution is to move away from AT&T, UVerse, and try Comcast again.
I don't know that changing providers is going to solve the problem if it's something
if the computer's already compromised, then when they switch, they'll just go through Comcast to get to the computer instead of AT&T.
Well, it's a Mac running a Lion.
Okay.
That's a little bit
less common.
Yeah, a little bit less common.
Yes, that's what I thought.
All right, well, sorry I couldn't help you more.
Okay. Have them change all their other passwords for sure.
Yeah, I think they've figured that out with helpers from their institutions that they deal with.
Okay.
Okay, thanks. Bye.
Thank you.
Right. Did y'all see the article recently about the these two guys? I'm not sure. Their name sounded maybe African or Middle East or something. I didn't see pictures. I just saw the names. But these two guys in Houston had gone around putting ATM skimmers.
Or skimmers, yeah.
Like, they had like 100 of them or something. They'd put on a bunch of different ATMs over several weeks, and it collected like, I want to say they said like 350 accounts and their PIN numbers. But it was funny because the people that I can't remember if they talked to the FBI, if it was HPD or who they were talking to. I want to say it was maybe FBI. But the guy was saying, like, it was so bad that in some instances, like, because what they did is they did an overlay, and then they had I guess it was a camera piece that was painted to look the same color as the ATM that was capturing them entering the PIN numbers and stuff. But like, it was so bad, like, it had gotten beaten up so bad that it was like almost hanging off the machine sometimes, and people just still kept using it.
Secret Service came in.
Well, the thing that's another aspect of the advances of technology, because the skimmers are getting so clever and so small
and cheap too.
They can put them right in, they have the ability to hook up a camera, a micro camera, hook up an SD card reader, and record the information and put it in such a small form factor that it's undetectable.
Well, now the some of them, I mean, they're getting access to like milling machines, and they're actually making metal milled keypads that transfer data wirelessly, and it's just an overlay. You just lay it over the real one, and when you press their button, it presses the button below it.
It raises it,
you know, a quarter inch to a half inch. But if you don't know what that machine normally looks like, you really wouldn't know that it wasn't legit.
So I'm always, pretty wary of like any kind of ATM where someone isn't looking at it the entire time. Like a lot of the stand up ones that you can actually hear, they've got to dial out, when you actually try to get cash out of them. So generally try and stick to the bigger banks and, places that are monitored 24/7 with
cameras.
But see,
I think they were using, I can't remember which bank.
These were on the west side,
I know there was some in the Chase drive-thru.
It was mostly Chase. It may have all been Chase. I'm not sure. It was mostly Chase, I think. And the ATMs they were showing that said this was one of them, it was like the big standalone machines that like are drive-through.
Wow.
I mean, it wasn't just like, you know, little ones in a convenience store or something. This was like...
Were there any walk-ups in front of banks, I wonder?
I don't know.
But or were they just like installing it from the car?
But they said, well, they said eventually they went back through surveillance tapes for a long time and eventually found a surveillance tape where they saw one of the guys actually putting it on.
There's a good documentary on Netflix right now, American Underworld, and he goes around with a skimmer guy who's got all this data, and it shows he shows people what they do with the data and how they use it. It's a whole little 45-minute documentary that's really...
it's a training video.
Yep.
Hmm.
Mm. I'm going to have to go watch that.
Get ready for the next fundraiser.
We made our goal!
How the money rolls in. All right, well, we got not a lot of time left. We've got 6 minutes left in the show. We got 4 minutes of outros, so we're going to just play it casual and talk amongst ourselves rather than try to get the phones to ring for the last few minutes.
Well, you were talking about the kind of, you know, advances in technology and that. I read an article talking, you know, there's the Google Drive, you know, self-driving cars. And this person in this was off Hacker News is where I found it. But the thing that they pointed out is that when the self-driving car stuff, the biggest thing, biggest change that's going to come from that is think about all the jobs that driver jobs that'll be gone. Those will go away when self-driving cars are going around. Taxi drivers, you know, people who drive. You know, town car, those kind of service, car service drivers, bus drivers, all those jobs are going to disappear. They'll be replaced by a machine, literally. And I hadn't really thought about that. You know, you tend to think about, oh, hey, you know, if you need, wouldn't it be nice if you want to send the kids to school, if they have to be driven to school, that you don't have to go with? Just send the car, it'll drop them off and come back empty. But, you know, the downside for some people is obviously there's jobs that are going to be lost.
Well, they're also talking about how, you know, the I guess in Portland, was city in Portland or in Seattle, they raised the minimum wage. They went ahead
$15 an hour.
And yeah. So the companies that are hit by that have been, the managers have been taking on more duties, hadn't created more jobs.
Well, pretty soon, fast food, you're going to go in and you won't talk to a person. They'll just push some buttons and the food will come down a, you know, a slide or something. I would
imagine automation in fast food is not far away.
The world's first self-serve Subway. You have to ask yourself, what vegetables do you want? And then you slop them on the bread. And
it's going to go that way because, I mean, at this point, you know, labor was cheaper than technology. But at $15 an hour, maybe technology will be cheaper than the labor. We'll see.
Big changes are coming.
Yeah, I think that means that maybe and the article actually mentioned it. Maybe it's time to start thinking about a guaranteed, what was it? Basically, like a guaranteed minimum salary that everybody gets. Because think about what happens. What happens when there aren't enough jobs at all? Regardless of how experienced, trained,
we all have a lot of leisure time.
Yeah, and we start kissing up to the robots because they'll decide everything.
Well, you would hope that the automation would mean that the price of consumables would go down, so making things more affordable if you're not having to pay a full.
But time is money, and we'll have more time, so we'll have more money.
Yeah, there you go. They don't have money in Star Trek either, so maybe that's what the future is.
Set phasers to stun.
All right,
that was Star Wars.
Phaser stun Star Trek. I don't know what the voice was though.
Yeah, I'm just being silly. I'm still waiting for my ice cream.
Look how inefficient Star Wars was. You had this one robot that does a lot of stuff, but then you had to get a whole nother robot to be able to understand and talk to them.
You had to be neurotic, too. All right, well, we're out of time, and we're going to get out of here. So thanks for tuning in. Come to the Geek Gathering this Friday. Information is up at their website, geekradio.com. This has been Technology Bites. I'm Jay Lee.
I'm Peter Hughes.
I'm Flicted.
I'm Barrett.
And he's
Groovehouse.
Plant It Forward is an organic farming nonprofit that offers refugee farmers an opportunity to become self-sufficient through growing, harvesting, and selling produce from a sustainable urban farm within the city of Houston. Plant It Forward offers farm share memberships where people become members of the farm and receive a weekly share of vegetables in return. These can be picked up at 6 different locations throughout Houston, including Westbury, Montrose, The Heights, Southwest Houston, and the Eastside Farmers Market. The spring-summer season has begun. You can visit plant-it-forward.org to register. This is 90.1 KPFT, Houston.
Imagine hearing KPFT even when a thunderstorm has knocked out power to our transmitter. Imagine listening to your favorite KPFT programs when you're out of town. You can. You can listen online with your computer. Go to kpft.org, then click on one of the Listen Live links at the very top of our homepage. We have medium and high fidelity links there for both our regular analog channel and our HD2 channel. See the links at the top of kpft.org. There's more. Imagine being able to hear any KPFT program at any time that fits your schedule. Go to archive.kpft.org and listen or download any show from the last 2 weeks. For information on subscribing to your favorite show, to download it automatically to your computer, click on the podcast help link at archive.kpft.org.